Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, July 20th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And hard to believe, this month is almost over. Incredible.
Back at it again.
Incredible. But let's go ahead and say that we had another nice day in gold today. Still climbing in the New York spot price aftermarket. We're looking at $18.18 for gold, up $7.10. Silver, almost. The futures contracts probably broke 20, but in spot we're looking was at $19.99. Right now it's up 55 cents at $19.97. Platinum is up $9 at $850. Palladium was up 45 at $2,139. The USDX today is down 0.17, finally in the 95.83. Crude oil was up 12 cents at 40.71. And let's go to the paper markets and see what they did today. They were kind of struggling all day long. You have the Dow up 8 points, 26,680. But there was no struggle in the NASDAQ. It was up a little over, or almost, slightly over 2.5%. Up 263 points at 10,767. The S&P was up 27 at 3,251. 10-year yield, 0.62%. No surprise there. European markets barely moved. And it just seems like everything is happy. Everything is coming back. There's nothing out there to disrupt anything out there.
Another day, another hunky-dory.
Another hunky. That's what I like. Pennsylvania Dutch, hunky-dory.
Hunky-dory.
I don't know if that's contributed to Pennsylvania Dutch, but kind of sounds like it.
I know, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, hunky-dory. Before we get into some things, I just want to say there was another hedge fund billionaire, Leon Cooperman. He said he thinks the market is overvalued. Duh. No kidding, Sherlock. And that it has overlooked a number of things. And I bet our listeners know what those number of things are. And, of course, it's the China relationship deteriorating and the tremendous increase in debt in the system. Now, he's saying certainly from the election. Well, I'm not quite sure what that is. He wasn't relating the debt, but he said the election is also going to have an impact on the markets and the virus issues. And so he's claiming that the markets are way, way too high. And we're going to talk about estimates again of gold topping 2,000 again. That's kind of like a no-brainer at this level. It's like, but they don't want to go too far out on that limb. Oh, heavens forbid they actually say the 3,000 for gold. Can't do that. Oh, heavens no. You might have everybody and their brother dump their paper and get into gold. They can't have that. Not yet. Not yet. But so it really is kind of funny, but at least they're saying gold. And at least they have an upward projection for it. And of course, that should keep. Well, I know where gold and silver is going, and I know the importance of it, but for those who don't, it should give them perhaps a little edging to make the decision to make sure that they convert those paper dollars and get some real money. Some of the things that we see in the economy that I think will probably continue to get worse as we head into, we get the numbers from the third quarter, but air travel, the demand is easing. And I find it hard to believe that it was actually strengthening, but it's easing again because of the spike of the virus cases in the southern U.S. In the week ending yesterday, over 4.6 million people passed through checkpoints at U.S. airports. That's down more than 4% from a week earlier, and the first weekly percentage drop since April. And You know, it was up sharply, as I said, from the five-decade lows that was hit in April. But I don't know. The peak season, summer season is, you know, always really crucial to the airline revenue, but it's even more important this year with this grim outlook for corporate travel this fall because of the pandemic. And of course, no one will be traveling through the Christmas holidays this year, most likely either. We had Delta Airlines last week. We talked about this, that it would have the number of additional flights planned for next month to 500 a day. And of course, that's lost jobs also, Dave.
Indeed. Their CEO, Ed Bastian, said demand has stalled as the virus has grown, particularly in the South across the Sun Belt, but also now hitting some northern states with some the reintroduction of quarantine measures. Now, Delta has offered its pilots a 15% cut in the number of hours, minimum number of hours, in return for a guarantee of no furloughs for a year. And more than 1,400 pilots have signed up for the company's early retirement plan, which expired yesterday. You know, Southwest Airlines just reported this afternoon that I believe 17,000 of its employees have signed up for an early retirement plan, and American Airlines warned its 25,000 employees that their jobs could be at risk when federal aid terms expire on October 1st. American CEO Doug Parker said that our passenger revenues in June were more than 80% lower than last year. Looks as though we'll be hearing some more specifics from the airlines later on this week. In fact, tomorrow, United will report its second quarter results. All airline stocks were down today, roughly 2.5 to 3%, Melody.
Well, you know, I guess the cruise lines, too, they've also been put on notice that they're still dead in the water. No cruising for a while yet. I can't recall what the date was for, I think, at least till this fall, at least for another 3 months, I believe it was. I can't even imagine what it's doing to some of these businesses. I mean, but of course, all these businesses, the big ones anyway, are getting money from government. You know, if they're not, you know, the cruise lines, if they're not getting money from us, they're getting money from other countries and so forth. So, and it would be interesting to see that these multinational corporations, are they getting money from all of these multiple countries? Because all the countries are producing stimulus to these places and to various corporations. So, or are we the only ones paying our corporations to stay in business so they don't have to use their own cash?
Interesting question. We'll have to search that out.
Would you do that, please?
Most absolutely.
Well, we talked about Citigroup and came out, said, hey, the gold could top 2,000 by the end of the year. And, they're looking to, they forecasted that they would, gold would take out the record that was set in 2011. And of course, again, as I said, this is according to the too big to fail bank, Citigroup. And we know we've seen gold benefiting from, you know, all this loose monetary policies, the low real yields, record inflows into ETFs, and increased asset allocations. Now they're saying gold is expected to climb to an all-time high in the next 6 to 9 months, a 30% probability it'll top 2,000 an ounce in the next 3 to 5 months. Nominal gold prices have already posted fresh records in every other G10 and major emerging market currency this year. It's only a matter of time for fresh highs in the U.S. dollars. And again, this comes from the Citigroup analysis. They said the demand for a store of wealth should also lift silver. And, of course, we saw silver touch a three-year high in New York today. Citigroup is among a long line of market watchers in predicting bullion will either test or top its long-standing record as the resurgence of viruses cases, as we're seeing around the world and also here in the States. And I think it's important, Dave, that the reason we talk about Citigroup, it's too big to fail, is because they play in the paper markets.
Absolutely.
That means their money is going to be going, and they're going to help push the price higher. So, so not, you know, and so yes, we look at people taking, we want to convert those fiat dollars into real money. That's the goal. Not to trade in paper. You know, you really don't want to trade in paper, but you want to convert those fiat dollars into real money, which is gold and silver. Gold and silver has always been real money, and it always will be. And, you know, we talk, everybody talks, I don't talk about it much, the cashless society and, you know, all the coin shortages and all this. It's like, do not become distracted. Focus on the fundamentals of gold and silver. We look at this as talking points. Even the gold and silver ratio is a talking point. But the whole idea is getting out of that paper money you hold and getting it into real money to protect you against everything that we talk about. So, Dave, we've seen gold surge already 19% this year.
Yeah, it's true. Closing in on 20, we're just barely halfway through the year, and certainly on its way to its highest since 2011. As the pandemic continues to drive investors to safe havens. Citi happens to see silver rising to $25 an ounce in the next 6 to 12 months, with the potential for 30 based on the bank's bull case, and again, supported by a recovery in global economic activity. Now, spot silver last traded at those levels in 2013, while again, gold's not far off its record of 1921, set in 2011. And again, too big to fail, Citigroup. You might be viewing their perspective with a jaundiced eye, and for the most part, that's healthy. You should. And we do. But again, as Melody indicated, these too-big-to-fail banks, whatever they are, there are a lot of things. They're influence peddlers. They have a lot of pull with major individual and institutional investors. And again, they often practice what they preach. And so, again, if you see a bank of that size plus a number of its particularly larger retail and institutional clients reallocating their assets to put more in gold and silver, that's got to put even more upward pressure on the price as that level of demand increases. So both gold and silver are following 6 straight weeks of gains, and a lot of this is coming on the heels of all this stimulus being thrown into economies around the world by governments and central banks. You know, 4 EU governments have been holding up negotiations over a massive rescue package there. They started discussions on Friday, and today appear very close to reaching an agreement. Melody and Butch, I'm sure, will talk about that on tomorrow's program, should there be any worthwhile news there to report. And of course, in this country, Trump administration officials and members of both parties in both houses of Congress have now started to get into some real negotiating over additional stimulus here. Fiscal policy, that is. Melody.
Well, yeah, nothing like waiting till the last minute because the program is, and what's really important is the $600. You know, they need to do, and that ends at the end of the month. So they got, you know, not too many more days before they come up with something to keep any panics out of the market. And that's their whole job. That's what they do. They want to make sure there's no panic because they certainly don't want people panicking. And as much as they should be, I'd be very panicky right now unless you're prepared with gold and silver. But, you know, and even the S&P, Sean Roach, the ratings agency, the S&P Global Ratings, he's the chief economist for Asia Pacific, said some countries, including the U.S., have shown a degree of fiscal fatigue and are considering rolling back some of the stimulus.
There he added, that's he is quite right dangerous. Now, Melody.
Pardon?
There he is right now.
Yes, he is. He's listening to the program.
He wants to tell everyone personally.
Okay, we'll see if we can't get him connected. Todd? But he said that he added that if you roll back, he says that's quite a dangerous thing to do when demand in the rest of the economy still remains quite suppressed. So he hopes to see some of these fiscal measures being renewed, pushed forward into the next year, and that is going to mean more fiscal easing, but at the moment there is no alternative to that. Roach explained that additional spending will worsen the balance sheets of governments, but it's necessary to prevent things from getting even worse. You know, I don't know, Dave, you know, it keeps it from getting worse, but what happens when you expand those balance sheets to the point, to which is worse, dealing with it now or dealing with it when it collapses?
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's this is such a very curious, very troubling time. I mean, it is akin to 2008 in the sense that, you know, then Bernanke and Tim Geithner and some of the other people and members of Congress were saying that, you know, they had to go through with this $1 trillion bailout of the banks and insurance companies like AIG to prevent a worldwide meltdown. And fast forward to 12 plus years, and essentially we're hearing the same things, maybe not in quite such stark terms yet anyway, but so many, particularly mainstream economists are saying and have been saying, but the closer we get to the end of this PPP and pandemic unemployment benefits, which technically, you know, end July 25th, the more we're hearing that the failure to renew or extend could have, quote, devastating consequences for our economy. So it really is between a rock and a hard place, and how in the world you find that happy medium that prevents devastation for individual Americans and sort of keeping the economy from just going in the tank. That's for someone above my pay grade.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Remember, folks, you're converting your paper dollars, your fiat dollars, into real money. That's what it's all about. You're buying the insurance to protect your purchasing power. And, you know, we can get all kinds of exciting and sensationalism, and maybe I do need to bring more of that. Maybe that's what you want to hear. I don't know. Maybe you want to hear a little bit more sensationalism when it comes to gold and silver, or maybe I need to present it in a more sexy way. But, you know, you have to stick to the basics. You know, I talked to a gentleman this morning. Well, I don't know how much gold I should have, and I don't know how much silver I should have. And, you know, the gold ratio, I got a call from somebody who told me to trade all my gold for silver, so when the silver prices go up, then I can trade it all back. Come on. Who buys that line? No, you don't. The only one that's benefiting from that is the guy that's making the phone call to you. Gold and silver, there's the right time to trade. Now you buy, you accumulate, and you hold. There's sometimes you can trade. People have traded with palladium at these levels. They sold their palladium and bought gold or silver. That's a good trade. It's a good trade if you have, you know, if you bought palladium at 800 and you're selling it now to buy platinum. That's a good trade. But don't get caught up in these pitches from various people. I can't tell you a million times, Dave, I am asked, which is a better investment, gold or silver? There's not a simple answer to that. There's so many factors that come into play. And I'm not a financial planner. So what it comes down to, so many, is what's suitable for you. It's not which is the best investment. I mean, if you're going to chase yields, I can recommend other things that will give you a bigger yield than silver will, but with yield comes risk. You have volatility with silver. And I have clients, I have a spectrum of clients from a range from 100% in silver to 100% in gold, 50-50, 80-20, you name it. But you buy what's suitable for you. And as the price of silver and gold rise, you're going to hear more of these pitches. Now, a lot of these people that are pitching gold and silver now are from Wall Street. So they have the Wall Street mentality. They want you to trade. That's the Wall Street mentality.
Turn over.
Pardon?
Churn, churn, churn.
Absolutely.
Turn it over.
You're right.
That's their version of portfolio management.
Yes. You're absolutely correct. So, again, I mean, you do that with paper. You don't do it with, I don't even know if you should do it with paper, but there's a proper time. But anyway, we're back to gold and silver. So again, you're going to hear all of these different predictions. You hear, and you know what? Anybody who gives you a date when something is going to happen, to me, they know less than what they're saying they know. Because no one knows the date. Because we're at a time that it could happen tomorrow. I think that's, anything could happen at this point in time. Going forward, I think it could happen tomorrow, it could happen next month, it could happen by the end of 2020, it could happen in the middle of next year. But I do believe we do see something, I do see something happening. I don't know what. Anybody who says they know what, we know it involves money. We know it involves our debt, our economy. stock markets.
How are premiums right now? Are they coming down on silver?
They're still high, but they're not as high as they were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're paying close to $6 for Silver Eagle, and that's lower than most people who sell online. You know, they're not giving that good of deals online. And I said, I'm going to compete the best I can just to try to bring those premiums down. But now product is beginning to get tight. Now they're playing with the availability. So like on Silver Eagles, we're looking at 2 to 3 weeks out. Canadian Maple Leafs, 2 to 3 weeks out. Which isn't bad. You know, I pretty much stop recommending Golden's... When silver becomes 4 weeks out, I don't go beyond that. You can find something else to buy with immediate delivery. So, but anyway, and this is the market we live in. If we see this virus creep up and you have another mint that shuts down, then we're going to run into the same problem. And you know that's going to happen when the market begins to fall. Kind of like it did in March. Isn't it funny that all of a sudden they closed down the mint and you couldn't get gold and silver? At the same time, the paper market was crashing and everybody wanted gold and silver. So who knows what's going to happen? But product will disappear. And people are going to be sitting there with hundreds of thousands of dollars on their retirement account sheet. Quarterly statements, and they're going to just watch it flutter out, losing its purchasing power, being devalued with the dollar. Someone said the dollar is going to be zero by, I don't know, such and such. I don't know if the dollar is going to go to zero, but I'll tell you what, if we're at 95 now and it goes to 50, it's going to feel like it went to zero. As much as you're going to lose, it's going to feel like it went to zero.
Can you imagine?
If they default on the debt, they already have a plan on how it's going to work. We're just not privy to it. So we estimate, we guess, history tells us how it might work. We know the numbers. We know the amount of debt. We know what happens to fiat currencies when it gets defaulted on. They can replace the dollar with something else. But I mean, how many of you are out there holding Iraqi dinars waiting for that to come in? You know, that's a different topic. But what do you think? If you think they're going to devalue the dollar, it's going to go to zero. I mean, why would you hold it? And that's the same thing with Iraqi dinars. People hold Iraqi dinars thinking that it's going to be revalued and you're going to make millions of dollars. Well, if it's revalued, why wouldn't it go to zero first?
It would.
It's no different than what would happen that you think is going to happen to the U.S. dollar. So, again, if you don't know what the future holds in our monetary system, in our economy, and your savings, why wouldn't you go into something that's going to protect everything that you worked for? I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. But, and yet it seems to so many people that the gold and silver is one of the most complicated things that they can understand, and it's not. It's very simple. But I get the misinformation that you can find on the internet, and that can make it very difficult. But give us a call, 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Here's just more money that people don't have to pay back. Steve Mnuchin, I think we touched on this last week. He wants that the taxpayer-funded business loans. Did you get that? Taxpayer-funded business loans under a certain amount could be automatically forgiven without compliance checks. So the guy who went and bought a home somewhere... or when gambling somewhere, or went and bought his wife, you know, it doesn't matter. But what he's saying is it would mean an unprecedented $130 billion in loans under the Paycheck Protection Program would turn into grants to private businesses. The PPP loans were designed to be forgiven once borrowers proved the money was used for certain business expenses like payroll, rent, utilities. I never thought they should ever have been turned into grants. I mean, even if you gave them money and made them pay it back without any interest, but not a grant. And so now they don't even have to prove that it was applied for any business expense. I mean, you could put anything under a business expense. A trip to Tahiti. Well, that was a business expense. I was under a lot of stress. My doctor told me I needed to go to relax. So if it's forgiven, it's not even necessary to prove what the money was used for. The forgiveness becomes automatic. Should we have forgiveness for all the small loans? I think that's something we should consider, Mnuchin said at a congressional hearing when asked how the process to forgive loans could be streamlined. We should obviously make sure there is some fraud protection, he added. Well, no, duh. It wasn't clear what he meant by small loans, possibly those under $150,000, which amount to about 86% of the number of loans granted, but only 26% of the total amount that was paid out by the government. Two bank lobbying firms made the pitch, Dave, last month to automatically forgive all PPP loans under $150,000. What say you?
Well, remember that despite initial demands that all PPP loans be identified, the recipients, Mnuchin only earlier this month agreed to release information on businesses, but only those that received loans over 150K. And even then, those were grouped into certain categories like 150 to 350, 350 to 500, 500 to a million, and so on. Without publicly releasing details on businesses that received less than that amount, it's really impossible for the public to track compliance with the terms of the program. As of last month, the federal government had supposedly made just about 5 million loans, totaling $520 billion. Some of those recipients had been sharply criticized. Records released by the Treasury Department and the SBA revealed that the Union Square Hospitality Group, that's owned by Danny Meyer, the founder of Shake Shack, was given between $11 and $27 million in PPP funds. Now, remember the Shake Shack, ladies and gentlemen? We talked about this right after the program was unveiled. Initially, they received $10 million. But after it was found out, published, criticized in the media, they were pressured into paying that back. Well, turns out they reaped upwards of $27 million anyway. These wealthy lobbying and hedge fund operations, big chains, firms owned by foreign companies, even federal lawmakers and several companies with ties to the president have been granted substantial loans, which now could be converted automatically into grants. Where does it end, Melody? Where does it end?
It makes me now wish I would have applied for one. You know?
There's still money available. Unfortunately, I think the deadline for applying is passed.
Oh. Well, I didn't need one, but should have applied for one anyway.
Talk about PPP2.
And there you go. We know there's going to be a PPP2, so I'll wait for that one. But geez, Luigi, it really is amazing. Well, you know, our newsletter will be out. Trying to get it out today. It might be first thing in the morning. But what's your article about today, Dave?
Well, it's about how economists are determining if and when we'll be in recovery mode. You know, as we know, last month, the National Bureau of Economic Research made it official that the U.S. had been in a recession since February. The NBER is the government agency whose job it is to designate when we're in a recession and when we're out of it. Unemployment had skyrocketed to depression-era levels. GDP was in a sinkhole all of a sudden. Manufacturing slowed to a crawl. In short, in a couple blinks of the eye, the pandemic had wiped out the longest expansion in U.S. history. And since then, signs of a potential recovery have been, well, up, down, and all around. I mean, causing a run on Head and Shoulders from the rampant head-scratching among confused economists. Joblessness has gradually slowed down, and the stock market has shown bizarre resilience, with certainly gold and silver enjoying the ride, but other indicators have looked a lot worse.
You know, we have all this talk about the various types of recoveries, the V, the W, the L. We even talked about a K last week. Other than them just telling us we're in a recovery, whether we really are or not, what signs are they, or what is the usual thing that people look for?
Well, that's the real question, isn't it? I mean, the NBER defines a recession as a minimum of 2 months of negative GDP growth. Now, it's since been expanded informally by a number of other outfits and economists who follow these trends all of the time. But in a recent survey, the 538 Group and the Initiative on Global Markets, which is part of the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business, asked 31 economists which metrics they're focusing on to determine if there's a recovery and where the economy might be headed. And not surprisingly, economists are looking the most closely at GDP. 81% of them said they're watching GDP very closely. Another 16% somewhat closely. The second most watched figure is the unemployment rate. Like GDP, an important lagging indicator, 71% said they're looking at it very closely. Another 26% somewhat closely. And third, retail and food sales. Probably because the hospitality and retail industries have been harmed the most during these virus-related shutdowns. 61% watch them very closely.
Hey, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. We'll finish this up when we return, and you're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Dave, when we were coming on the break, we were talking about the recession and things to see to bring us out. And, you know, this is all based on what they want us to know and how they think. You know, I mean, heck, it took them how many months? 4 months to tell us that we were in a recession from, you know, February, and nobody's even talking about that. So are there anything else that we can look for to that they'll give us, that they'll show, that, you know, other than the stock market?
Well, there are. It's a good question, because in the categories we talked about before the break are lagging economic indicators, and that are reported monthly, in some cases quarterly, and even then we're not finding out for another 2 to 4 weeks after the month or quarter end. So there's a terrific lapse in time, you know, more often than not, the numbers are outdated by the time they're reported. So one of the things that drew me to this survey was the fact that 538 and IGM looked at metrics that are more frequently updated. And we won't go into a lot of detail because the article talks about it, but they looked at things like consumer spending, initial unemployment claims, job postings, the number of job postings, traffic patterns, you know, how many miles are people commuting and pleasure driving, and then cell phone user mobility, and again, another metric that might show if people are, you know, moving around, either from home to work or from home to vacations. So, I mean, clearly, consumer spending was a very useful metric. 65% of the economists said they would watch that very closely. So, I mean, and that's a good thing, too, because, I mean, most Americans agree that the lack of reliable, updated, current data has been a major feature of the crisis we've been going through, you know, whether it's, you know, public health or economic data. So, you know, you ask then, how will we know if things are getting better? Well, it can be a little coy and say, well, you just have to read the newsletter article to find out. But here's a clue, and, you know, I just kind of mentioned it. The answer is hidden in people's willingness to spend. So no matter what metric or metrics resonate with you, ladies and gentlemen, I think most of us can agree it's going to be a long, long time before we reach a full recovery. So check out the article and some other good information from Wendy Wilson and Doug Nolan, plus Melody's weekly market update.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. You know, we've really seen some eye-popping statistics that they have given us when it comes to the what the pandemic has generated and how it has devastated this country. I mean, this country was already devastated, but this just added to it. And here's the latest. Half of U.S. adults live in households they've lost income from jobs. I don't think that's any too much of a big surprise to anybody. But sometimes I think the numbers, when you look at these statistics, and it makes me think that these are actually low numbers, and I'll tell you why I think that. But what the Census Bureau found in its most recent weekly survey, and now this was conducted between July 2nd through July 7th, And that's tracking the virus impact on the nation. So maybe between that, but, and we've seen that some states and even more residents, you know, are affected than others. But take Hawaii, for example. Hawaii depends on tourism. The share is 62%, while in Nevada, where all the casinos had shut down, it's 60%. New York and California came in at roughly 58%. I don't know, when you think of Nevada, or Dave, I don't know, I'm sure there's other businesses, but it's all based on the casinos. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that's 60% seems low.
Yeah, well, know,
it, as high it, as it is, does. I think it seems low. But then we're dealing with the week from July 2nd, which is the 4th in there, so you don't have a full week. And, you know, maybe that's why there's maybe, and plus time, you know, maybe that's why there is a little, why it's, am I wrong in thinking that seems like a low number?
No, I think it's good intuition, in my humble opinion, that it does seem like those very intense tourism, hospitality, centric states would be, you know, even worse than what we're seeing.
Yeah, because when you look at New York and California, they came in roughly at 58%. That you can buy, so, you know, I don't know. So, you know, I mean, we'll see, but I mean, these are interesting and staggering numbers, even as they are. You know, some of the places that fared a little bit better, of course, was D.C. at 35%, North Dakota, no surprise, 36%. Iowa, Idaho, 39%. 20 million Americans lost their jobs in April. That was the swiftest and steepest decline on record. Although more than 7 million people found work in May and June, the government's headline unemployment rate was 11.1%. That's still the highest number since World War II. And the recent surge in cases is likely to mean even more layoffs and hardships. And especially when combined with the shaky finances of larger companies, several of which have recently announced, you know, sweeping job cuts and or massive potential downsizings, Dave.
Yeah, a quarter of those surveyed missed last month's rent or mortgage payment. Over 10% lived in households where there was either sometimes or often not enough to eat over the previous 7 days. 40% had delayed getting medical care in the prior 4 weeks, and a quarter reported having little interest or pleasure in doing things more than half of last week or nearly every day, a classic sign of depression. Almost one-third said they felt anxious or nervous over the same period. Clearly, a very troubling period of our time. As Winston Churchill said a long time ago, Melody, when you're going through hell, keep on going.
Keep on trucking. Yep. Well, you know, it's interesting because I had a conversation with a neighbor, and their daughter is a teacher, and she has two young children at home. And she was doing the classes, you know, online. And she said she is beginning to see changes in the children. She says it's, you know, she says at first it was fun and the kids got a kick out of it. And, you know, she's trying to watch her children and she's giving classes online and so forth. But she said she's definitely, and she's seeing the changes in her children that being in the home, unable to see friends, unable to go to school. And you hear about it, and I think some of us don't pay attention to it, thinking it's like, well, you know, you can do something to help your children to keep that from happening. I was just a little surprised. So it is. So I believe it is happening, and that's why these children need to go back to school. It is important. So they do need to find a way. And, you know, they were talking about going back, you know, 2 days or 3 days or whatever, a week. I think it'd be good to go back 5 days, but just shorten the days. I saw where government was going to be giving schools money, but I guess there's strings attached. The federal government was going to give schools money to open, but I guess there's strings attached to that also. But it is important that these children go back to school. So I just wanted to share that because it made me relook at things, a certain thing. And so hopefully it helped you too. You know, I'm not a fan of Bernanke. I'm not a fan of Janet Yellen. It all depends on the data. That's all she said in the whole year she was there. It's all dependent on the data. But anyway, they're warning that the economic recovery from the virus shock could be slow. It could be uneven. And said the Fed may opt to cap yields on Treasury securities to help it along. It is possible, though not certain, that the Fed will implement yield curve control. They wrote on the Brookings Institute website, laying out testimony they delivered on Friday to a House subcommittee. But the Fed has looked into the possibility of capping yields on short and medium-term treasuries. Although its policymakers have suggested that further study is needed before deciding whether or not to go ahead, I think they did it once before. But Yellen's told the subcommittee that it would be a catastrophe if Congress decided not to continue to enhance unemployment insurance that's due to expire. She said a catastrophe. I can't imagine what would happen if that $600 isn't continued. She said, we need the spending that those unemployed workers can do. Yellen said the program would be restructured to cap total insurance payments at a fixed percentage of regular income. Bernanke and Yellen said they expect the Fed to provide clearer guidance on its plans. So here, you know, whatever happened to, you know, one leader of the Fed, now you got Bernanke and Yellen giving their 2 cents and telling what everybody needs to do. But I do think that that comment of hers, because she was always such a...
Data-driven
person with very little excitement or strong language in her... in her speech is for her to say that it would be a catastrophe. That's what I find most interesting. But
The catastrophe. Maybe she's writing her own stuff these days. Maybe she doesn't have that monotone speechwriter anymore.
Maybe.
That helped forge that personality of hers.
Maybe.
But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, there are already close to 12 million people who reportedly couldn't make a rent payment last month. And, without the extra $600 that they're getting, it's certainly become a major factor in millions of people's lives. But and on top of it, there are people who aren't making their mortgage payments. I mean, now, you know, there is the forbearance program that allows some people to not pay their mortgage for up to a year. They have to eventually pay them back either through a refinancing or just paying back what they had put into forbearance. But we know that, what are we looking at here? The share of all mortgages that were past due, sort of 3.5%. And that's the highest going back to 1999. During the last housing bust in 2008, it peaked at 2%. So this is already over 50%, almost 65% higher. All told, more than one-third of Americans, one-third, that's 100 million, missed a housing payment in July. That's rent or mortgage. I guess 100 million is probably because that's... that would in any event, especially if there's no extension to the pandemic unemployment benefit, there are going to be millions of more Americans are going to fall so far behind on their rent or mortgages. There are going to be a rash of new foreclosures and a rash of new evictions. And boy, that's going to see 20, 30 million people kicked out of their homes. Now, that's a worst case scenario, obviously, but even if it's, you know, say a tenth of that, that's 2 to 3 million. That we're not in Kansas anymore, and this could very well be, you know, what we've been talking about for a number of years. When we keep saying, when we say this is worse than the Great Recession, it's worse than the Great Recession. When people who've been doing this for a long time say this is as bad, if not worse, than the Great Depression. Melody.
Yes.
Whew. We're due for some kind of reset. I don't know what it is and where it leads us. But boy, oh boy.
All I know is that it should lead people to gold very easy. 800-375-4188. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe. Good night, and God bless.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.